Hello, I'm Chris Lisher, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel, an intelligent, lively discussion on astrology, art, and adventure. Timing is everything, and as the great wheel turns, we are best prepared when we are best informed. Join me as I explore the current planetary alignments and offer insights for coping with change. Educational, informative, enlightening, the Turning of the Wheel is a welcome pause in your daily swirl of constant change. Through intelligent discourse, inspired guests, and educational segments, I will help to enlighten your knowledge of astrology and guide you to accept change as the great wheel of life turns. Call in with your questions and speak with some of the greatest visionaries in the time-tested practice of astrology. Turning of the Wheel, Astrology, Art, and Adventure with Chris Lisher, each Thursday, live, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Contact Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Lisher, and this is a show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure, as we all know. And I was just listening to my intro, and I was thinking about how I was talking about the time-tested practice of astrology. But there's also many other time-tested divination tools out there. And we are in a time of great change, not to say that time isn't always changing, because the times are always changing. We know that from one minute to the next, we have constant change underfoot. But the times now are especially relevant and especially powerful because of the sort of the planetary alignments that we're under. We are staging ourselves now in January of 2010. In 6 months from now, we will be faced with what's called a Grand Cardinal Cross. And the Grand Cardinal Cross is a very significant time because it's going to indicate major planets at all of the four cardinal signs in the chart of the astrology chart. The four cardinal signs are the first, the fourth, the seventh, and the tenth. Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. And this summer, between the last week of July and the first week of August, we're going to have a lot of activity around that. So this signals great change. Now, change is often met with great fear by many people because it's the fear of the unknown. And I think that's valid. But oftentimes, think of the times that you faced fear, you faced change, and you were fearful beforehand. And then when you look back at it, you say, oh gosh, it wasn't that bad after all. That's not to say that change isn't difficult, and it's not to say that it isn't challenging, and it's not to say that the times that we're in right now aren't especially challenging, because they certainly are. I'm in Massachusetts, and we have just been dished out a referendum that sort of shifts the whole healthcare package process, and so we are faced with change today. And my next guest is Sandra Ingerman, and she's a wonderful shaman, and she has written many, many books about the topic of change and how to best utilize this energy. The book we're going to be discussing about today is How to Thrive in Hello. Changing Times. And this is a wonderful – hello, Sandra. Are you there? Hello? We had this problem last time with her. This must be a sort of a shaman thing. Hopefully that isn't the case. But her book is How to Thrive in Changing Times, Simple Tools to Create Health, Wealth, Peace, and Joy for Yourself and the Earth. So, you know, how we approach this whole coming time, and this coming time is very austere. It's going to be very, very powerful because of, as I mentioned, the cardinal signs that we're coming across. Whenever we have cardinal signs, we have enormous amount of energy. And so Sandra is going to provide us with some insight as to how to cope with these changing times. Oftentimes, we get wrapped up in our own daily world, and we get very scared and paranoid. But we have some very simple tools to get through this process, and she is an expert in this field. She's a shaman and has worked extensively with people and trying to find new ways of looking at life and how to cope with change successfully, which is one of the main themes of this whole show. So I am with great pleasure. I welcome back Sandra Ingerman to the Turning of the Wheel. Sandra, are you there?
I am here, Chris.
Thank you very hooray.
Much. Yay, we did it.
Well, at least let's not be too optimistic here. We might send you off into the outer space again. We don't know.
You never know.
I know. But anyway, as I was mentioning earlier in my intro a little bit, we have just in Massachusetts, where I'm from, have been handed this political shakeup with new senator coming in and stuff like that. That's sort of in this blue state of all states. We have a Republican senator now. But rather than getting down that path, I'd like to talk about your book, which is How to Thrive in Changing Times, because all of us here in Massachusetts and across the globe are gearing up for what I see as a major shift from an astrological standpoint this summer. And so we are in the midst of immensely powerful changing times. Now, change is always inevitable, but I think the changing times we're in the midst of now are probably more powerful and more relevant than usual. And how do you think we should be dealing with that?
Well, I think, you know, there are very, very ancient teachings that go back thousands of years. And I think that we have to start to focus our energies a bit and learn from what the ancients had to teach us. And one of the things that every spiritual tradition teaches is that everything starts in the invisible realms before it manifests into the physical. And so what that means is that there are spiritual practices that we can start to put into action that can help focus where we want these changing times to take us to. And so what we're seeing right now in our culture is people feel pretty disempowered because we didn't learn how much power we all have as children. We didn't learn that we're the creators of the universe. When we were children, we were taught how to behave and how to conform to society. And so now we're at a place on the planet where people are saying, who's going to make this better for us? Is it a Republican? Is it a Democrat? First we go for the Democrats. Nope, they didn't make it better. Let's go for a Republican. Nope, they didn't make it better. Let's go back to a Democrat. And basically, the future is really in our hands. It's not in the hands of the political leaders. It's not in the hands of the religious leaders. It's in the hands of the global community. And what we need to learn how to do is working with the principle of as above, so below, as within, so without. The as within are our thoughts and our words and the daydreams that we have. And the outer world is a reflection of our thoughts, our words, and our daydreams. And so we have to realize that what we're thinking about right now is what is going to lead us to the outcome that we see. And we need to learn how to change our thoughts and change the words that we use throughout the day and our daydreams to align with our desired outcome. And this is something that we all have the power to do right now. This is a place where we can work, where we are powerful and not powerless.
It's interesting. Yeah, I believe we do have that power. It's a matter of free will. And I think that perhaps people give up a little bit too easily. I think that we are a fairly immature society. And I don't say that to be irreverent. I think it's just that we're a young society in the right. United States, perhaps, and that we sort of want action quickly. And if it doesn't happen quickly, we sort of give up. And I think it's that tenacity and the perseverance that really will win out. And I think that if we work at this long enough and hard enough and with very good intentions, we can achieve those results. But it does take that tenacity, right?
Right. Yeah, I think part of the problem, I think there's a few things that kind of go on to sabotage us. For one thing, in the world that we live in today, it's not just our culture being somewhat new at all of this, is there's so many distractions. So you kind of start with spiritual practices. Oh, this sounds wonderful. I'm going to start to work with my thoughts and words. And then you watch the news and you go, oh, it didn't work, you know. And so basically what I've noticed, and I started noticing this when 9/11 happened, was that one of the problems with the spiritual community is they lose their focus so easily. And in spiritual traditions, it teaches no matter what is happening in the outside world, keep focusing on your desired outcome. And the other thing I think is that when we were kids, we all picked up, it's not things that necessarily people said to us, it's things that we just pick up in invisible ways these core beliefs and attitudes that make us believe that we are not creative beings and we don't deserve. So good things happen to everybody else, but they don't happen to me. I don't deserve for anything good to happen. Everybody else is more creative than I am. And so what happens is that when people start to work with some of the really potent spiritual practices that teach us how to gather our energies together for creation and manifestation, what ends up overriding our desired goals is these core beliefs and attitudes that are telling us it's impossible or I don't deserve it. And so what we really need to do is to go into a process of self-examination where we try to identify what these core beliefs and attitudes are, and where we also learn how to identify what's the difference between what my ego and rational mind wants, meaning what I learned from watching commercials, versus what my own soul is longing for. And that's where we oftentimes get disappointed, because our ego says, you know, I want another house, I want another car, but it could be that your own soul is yearning for something different. And so, you know, all those things kind of put together can end up affecting what the desired, you know, where we go as far as the outcome.
Seems as if that sort of that collective guilt is a sort of a pervasive problem that sort of overrides the society. And I suspect that goes back to the Puritans or something like that, where they sort of embedded this sense of stoicism, that we have to sort of, you know, suffer and live through these hard times, and that we don't deserve it because we're not worthy in some ways. But I think our mindset is changing.
Yes.
And I think the changing mindset we have is where we are. So that cusp that we're on right now, which is sort of breaching from the old way of thinking to the new way of thinking, is actually one of the hardest places to be, because it really brings about that sense of growing pain where we have to sort of rethink. And that rethinking process that you mentioned, the sort of the control of the ego over our thoughts, is a very powerful force to be reckoned with. And it's not an easy task.
No.
What would you suggest that we do to sort of really keep that in our focus? I mean, it's one thing to talk this and say this, but right. when we're in the midst of this swirl, how do we really hold on to that? I mean, other than just saying, I'm going to hold on to it.
Well, I think that finding some time out to be in nature, I think, is real key in helping us go to a deeper inner landscape inside of ourselves, where we can tap into more an intuitive spiritual knowing that can override that egoic mind. And nature is a real teacher for us in doing that, watching water running, and whether it's ocean waves or a river, watching the clouds moving across the sky, lighting a fire or lighting a candle and staring at the fire, standing out in the wind. Those kinds of things can take us more to a quiet space that allows that inner knowing to speak to us and starts to quiet the ego. And I think for me, that's been a real healer for me, and that's one of the things that I really teach people is being in the power of nature to go into those deep inner landscapes.
Yeah, I think that's a very valuable. I certainly feel much more connected when I go to the ocean, or I walk every morning, so I know that's my time to sort of do my meditative practice, because I do think it's important to put your feet on the ground and get out there and get that fresh air. I had this great thought that I just lost. I'm sorry.
It happens, doesn't it?
It does happen. I'm not sure what it is, if it's age or not, but I think it has. I know what it was. It was about the busy lives that we lead.
Yeah.
And sort of being able to embrace that in a way that it makes it a priority, because there's a lot of people who are running around with kids and sort of living the swirl of their daily lives, just trying to keep everything in place. To ask them, you know, this is the thing I hear from people all the time, is I have no time to do anything. So you say, well, how are you going to take, you know, 15, 20 minutes out of your time to do that?
Right.
But I think that it's a matter of making it a priority that really is the action. If you were told that this practice was as important to you and the world, to evolution, as balancing your checkbook or feeding your child, I think you'd pay a lot more attention to it. And I think it actually has that kind of weight, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the problems in America is, you know, we just are working so hard. And I was talking to my husband about this last night. It's actually an ongoing conversation that we have, because I am such a worker bee. And I've been in one of those places of feeling like I'm having a meltdown, you know, because I'm just doing too many things at the same time. And I was saying to him last night, you know, I've had the opportunity to be with many people as they were dying. And it's a common thing for people to say, my priorities were all wrong. I wish I would have taken a little bit more time to enjoy this, or to be more present in my relationship. And one of the things I started to wonder, you know, this was back in the 1990s. I was sitting in, staring out the window, and I was wondering, why do we have to wait until right before we're dying to say that my priorities were wrong? You know, when
or to say that to another person too. I mean, why do we have to be dead in order to be eulogized?
Right, exactly.
And if I knew that before I die, I might feel a lot better about myself.
Absolutely. And so, you know, at some point, I understand, you know, it's kind of like, I have to get this done. I'm on a deadline. I have to feed my kids. I have to do the laundry. I have to cook. I have to do this. And then we say we want the world to be a different place. And you know, one of the themes that I brought into my book, How to Thrive in Changing Times, is I was really impacted by Emmett Fox, who was a New Thought minister. And my favorite line that he has is, it is impossible to think one thing and produce another. And so the theme of what I'm trying to bring through in How to Thrive in Changing Times is that as a global community, if we would start to focus our energies together, our thoughts, our words, and taking some time to live in a place of honor and respect and drop in to that intuitive place, we can end up producing the world that we say we want to live in. But what's happening right now is people say, oh, I really wish that, you know, there was peace. I really wish there was harmony. I really wish there was balance. And we're spinning around, and we're not taking the actions in our own life that would actually lead us to a world of balance, because we're not balanced ourselves. And so the question each and every one of us has to ask is, how bad do things have to get before we stop and say, okay, I better do something different? And everybody listening to this program who's ever had a life-threatening illness knows exactly what I'm talking about, because at some point you say, my life is not in balance, and it's killing me, and I have to make a change.
Yeah, and it does require that. And I think that people oftentimes get frustrated because they figure almost as if they're doing their part to change their lives, but they can't get others to change their lives. And they say, I'm working really hard, I'm pushing this rock up the hill, and the rock keeps rolling back down because I can't get my neighbor down the street to change his mind and rethink that way. And I mean, I know it's a very long, slow process, and it's an evolutionary process, and it's probably the sort of thing that takes a society decades, if not centuries, to change. But I do think that we owe it to ourselves to sort of draw a line in the sand and say, from this moment forward, we work a certain way.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was just thinking that until we do that, we really can't even begin.
Right. And the important thing is, and I think this is a place that I always need to put attention to, and I encourage my students put attention to. If you mess up and go fall off the path and go in the different direction, don't beat yourself up, but brush yourself off and say, okay, you know, I forgot again, and I got caught up in too many distractions. Okay, I'm going to get back on the path again, because what happens is that a lot of people fall off the path and get distracted, and then they say, oh, well, you know, I tried, it didn't work. And so, you know, to keep getting up and getting back on that path and keep walking, I think, is important, too. And having compassion for ourselves, because in the culture that we live in, we're supported to be driven. And, you know, if we actually put all the energy that we're being driven into the disharmony that we're creating into actually creating a harmonious planet, I don't think we could lose at this point.
No, unfortunately, you know, the problem is that the powers that be, you know, sort of the people that you mentioned before, the politicians, the religious leaders, even the media outlets, really work counterproductively to us, because they do sort of fuel the exact opposite energy. So it does make it a bit of a challenge for us to rise to that, because it is such a powerful force. I mean, just the media alone has always has this sense of sensationalism, this sense of negativity. There's a very subtle imagery that and messaging that comes through, this sense of, you know, all of a sudden there's panic. And as a result of whatever that may be, there's always this, you know, sort of this very dramatic presentation of these facts that may not be as serious as they appear, but because they get ratings and people are watching, and there's a sense of urgency about it and tension, people are drawn to it. And that's when I think when our egos actually take over, because we're like, oh, thank God that's not me in that car accident or in that fire or whatever.
Right. And I know that for myself. I was back in the 60s, I was really into the whole anti-Vietnam War demonstration.
Oh, I was too, yeah.
And I remember I was so devastated as a teenager to see that something was so important to me and I had no possibility of creating change. And so what I had to do was I actually had to stop watching the news or reading a newspaper for years, because I really, I got so depressed and feeling powerless. And so then when I was able to come back and get back into the whole arena of the news and watch and reading the paper, I was able to come back with a different strength, with a different kind of centeredness. And one of the things that I teach my students and write about is, number one, if you're being too affected by the news, cut yourself off for a while until you can strengthen some of your spiritual practices of learning how to replace your negative thoughts and words with a vision that will align with the vision that you want, working with some of the creation and manifestation methods to dream the world that you really want to live in. And then I actually tell people to use some form of craft while you're watching the news. Once you're ready to come back into that arena, you know, knitting or beading or making knots, or I'm a spinner. I spin fiber into yarn on a spinning wheel. It keeps you in a centered place.
It does. Yeah, I agree. I was going to bring that up in the second half of the show. I really wanted to talk about that, and we will get to that in the second half of the show. I want to talk more about some of those techniques, because I think those are really important to bring up into stress, because they're very useful in refocusing us. And so we're going to get to that in the second half of the show. So I really want to kind of elaborate on that in some capacity. Just so everybody knows, we're talking today with Sandra Ingerman, and we're talking about how to thrive in changing times. We are very much in the midst of changing times. And I think that this summer, astrologically speaking, we're going to be in a much, much more volatile. And I don't use volatile in a bad way. I just say that it's going to be very action-packed time later this summer. And if astrology works, we will see, because this is what the astrology is saying to me. And we'll know soon enough this summer what sort of things we're undertaking. But change is inevitable. How we manifest the change is a question of our intention and how we can get there. So Sandra is my guest. We're going to come back in about 2.5 minutes to talk about this great topic, how to thrive in changing times, because we've got Sandra is a wonderful shamanic healer and teacher who's written a number of great books. Her website is www.sandraingerman.com, and it's on my website, chrisflisher.com. It's also on the Contact Talk Radio website, and I encourage you to go there and look at her website and look at her books. Her books especially are very full of very simple, straightforward tasks that help us move into these difficult times. So hang in there, folks. We'll be back. Again, my guest is Sandra Ingerman. While we're gone, why don't you have a quick look at her website, www.sandraingerman.com. And Sandra, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about some of these really interesting tools that you have.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we'll be right back.
What is your destiny? Where are you going? What is your real purpose? Do you know? Do you want to know? Of course you do. It's your duty to yourself. We are all here for a reason, and we all have great potential. Discover all of this and more with a professional astrology reading. My name is Chris Flisher, and I can help you. Discover your strengths and work on your weaknesses, and live your life to its fullest capacity. Based on your birthday, birthplace, and birth time, an authentic astrology reading will allow you to live your life to the fullest and reveal your true purpose. Only real astrology can give you real information. It is your destiny, and it is your path. Write me at chris@chrisflisher.com and book a reading today. Or call me, 978-264-0668. That's 978-264-0668. www.chrisflisher.com.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
As the world shrinks and our barriers come down, diverse cultures are striving for harmony, balance, and peace. To ease the transition, we need to expand with color, light, and tolerance. Now, you can become a global citizen and embrace the color and clear spirit with the divine artwork of the mandala. Mandalas are a timeless artistic offering for creating unity, harmony, and peace. My name is Chris Flisher, and I've spent years creating mandalas, and they are now available online at www.chrisflisher.com. Come and experience the world of color, form, and function with t-shirts, coffee mugs, note cards, and limited edition prints. These vibrant, lively paintings and products express optimism, oneness, and spiritual balance for all who use them. At www.chrisflisher.com, www.chrisflisher.com, and enter a world of possibility and color.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Flisher. My guest today is Sandra Ingerman, and we're talking about her book, How to Thrive in Changing Times. And we certainly are in the midst of a very unusual time, astrologically speaking. Those of you who tune into this show for astrology, I can tell you that the times, they are changing big time. Now, you can always argue that time is always changing, and I would be the first to agree with you. But I'm thinking, and I'm knowing this for a fact, that looking at the charts for the summer and beyond, we're in a very monumental time of great shift. And so because we're in this monumental time, it's important that we approach this shift – and this time with our best intention and with our best thoughts, and to be best prepared, because I've always said to be forearmed, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. That's one of my favorite phrases. And I think that by having the right tools, we can soften that change considerably. Sandra Ingerman's site, well, if you're listening in at the same time, is www.sandraingerman.com. Her books are available on Amazon as well from her website, I believe. And she's written several books about this kind of topic. And so it's my pleasure to have her on today. She's a shamanic healer. And we're going to be talking about some of the steps that we can take as individuals to sort of best address this changing times. And I was talking with Sandra during the break about some of the ideas that I was reading about in her book about tools you can use and sort of like things, basic things like, you know, focus things like creativity, automatic writing, automatic dancing, automatic thinking. These are things that you sort of do which allow you to sort of shut off some of the static, I think, in your brain, because your brain seems to be filled with static. And I think that these tools are especially useful. And Sandra, I'd love to know what your take is on this and how effective these distraction tools are.
Yeah, well, one of the things that has really impacted me personally is whenever I look into the eyes of many indigenous people, and these are people who have what we would call in our culture nothing, you know, below poverty level. Mm-hmm. And there's a light, there's a joy, there's a wealth that is shining out of their eyes that Westerners just would do anything for. And basically, these people, and we can do it too, are not focused on the outer world, but they live in a very deep, rich garden inside of themselves. They've made contact with a deep inner landscape, and they've been gardening that landscape, and it brings about an inner joy and an inner light that literally lights up everybody when they walk into a room. And that means that we have to go beyond the collective beliefs of what we should be gathering in this lifetime, material goods and better positions at work and, you know, all of that, that, you know, we keep trying to gather more things, but reversing direction of what we want to collect in the outer world and go into our own inner world and start to develop that. And so in order to do that, we have to get into a quiet space. And different things work for different people. Some people love silent meditation, whether it's Vipassana meditation or Zen meditation. Some people's minds are a little bit too active for that. And so finding other tools to be able to go into that deep inner space. And so one of the things that I share is about putting on some nice, relaxing music that doesn't have any words to it, but puts you a little bit into a quiet, altered state. And for some people, just putting their pen down on a piece of paper and allowing their pen to move without thinking about it, that works really well, and that's called automatic writing. For some people, they're more kinesthetic. They need to move. So doing some dancing or taking a walk outside drops them into that deep inner place. Some people, it's shamanic journeying, where they drop into those inner realms and meet up with helping beings who can help give them a deeper sense of peace and guidance. And so one thing doesn't fit for every person. And one of the things that I was trying to do is trying to address some different ways that I found in my over 25 years of teaching around the world that help people drop into more of that inner space. Because I know we all want to feel that inner joy and inner light. And that means reversing directions and going within to find it.
You know, all the things that you mentioned, are all distractions of sorts. And I want to be sure that people understand what I mean by that. There, I think maybe distraction may be perceived as a negative word, when really what I'm saying is it's sort of a refocusing of energy. And by putting your energy into the automatic writing, or by putting yourself into some sort of creative outlook endeavor, allows you to step outside. It's almost meditative, wouldn't you think, in some way?
Yeah. Absolutely. Like for myself, I teach workshops on shamanic journeying, going into an altered state and meeting up with helping compassionate spirits. And some people like to listen to drumming to get into that altered state. I actually need to drum to get into that altered state. The act of my hand with the drumstick beating on the drum gives my mind something to do. Wow, I can then be freed from my thinking mind to go into a deep inner state.
Hey, I totally get that, because I'm very ADD or ADHD, whatever. I'm probably both at the same time, if that's possible. But I have noticed that as well, and I think it's the sort of that repetitive ability. So, you know, I was also talking a little bit about the concept of EMDR, which is an acronym for I forget what, but
Eye movement desensitization therapy.
And what happens is that during the course of our lives, we establish habits, and based on stimuli that actually burn circuits between both sides of our brain. And so that when that stimuli comes back again to our lives, we react a certain way. EMDR is a method of a therapy which is incredibly successful by all reports that I've heard, and I've even tried it myself, where you break that pattern by, and it is about a passage of sound from one ear to the next, and it's, or you can also do it by tapping on your legs to sort of break that pathway down, and it's the actual physical motion of your hands on your body or on your shoulders or someplace, or that passage of noise from the left brain to the right brain, the right side to left side, that breaks those patterns down and sort of lifts you into this very hypnotic state that removes that daily chatter and that static, which is so prevalent in our society. It's really remarkable. I think I've had great success with it. And so your comments about drumming, I think, lead right into that in some way, right? I mean, that's sort of acts.
Yeah, I trained in EMDR because I'm a licensed psychotherapist, although it feels like a past life that I ever saw clients with it. But I still have to take CEUs to keep my license, and EMDR was just a delight to learn. And it's very interesting because it actually creates a state that's similar to a shamanic state of consciousness, where it quiets the thinking mind. And, you know, one of the principles of EMDR is to take a trauma that keeps going over and over in your mind as if it's still happening in present time, and to move it to the part of the brain says, yes, this happened to me at one time, and now it's the present, it's a new time, something else can happen now. And one of the things I wrote about that works on kind of a similar principle is the science of neuroplasticity, which I actually find pretty fascinating, and I've been really sharing in a lot of my workshops, because what it shows is that the brain is a lot more flexible than we ever thought it was. And back in the 1950s, some scientists started to work with changing neural pathways, creating new neural pathways so that something else could happen for people. And so one of the metaphors that I think makes neuroplasticity make a lot of sense is if you're sledding down the snow in a hill and you keep putting the sled exactly in the same tracks, the tracks are going to keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And so what that means is if we keep on repeating over and over again, the planet's gone too far, things aren't going to work out, there's no way we can fix the damage we've been done, we start creating these very deep tracks. And it takes some energy to pick up the sled and actually create new tracks. But when you start to replace those thoughts with something positive, as a global community, we can come together and start to focus our energies on creating positive change, you actually create new neural pathways in the brain that start to make that happen.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So let me ask you a question. I'm supposing I'm sitting on a subway and I'm in the middle of New York City and I'm on my way to work and there's all this stuff happening around me. Just put yourself in that position. I'm sure it's a familiar scene to many people who are listening. But what would we do in a time like that to get ourselves out of that swirl if we wanted to? How would we just turn that off?
Well, I did grow up in Brooklyn, New York, so I have a sense.
So you know about subways.
I do. I know a lot about subways.
I'm a little bit too much.
Right. And I don't want to get too esoteric here, but I do believe that a lot of the keys that we're looking for is from a spiritual perspective, because this is where we have power right now, is to work spiritually to create change. And from an esoteric point of view, the outer world is really a reflection of our inner state of consciousness. And mm-hmm. So for myself, whenever I see something that I, quote, dislike in the outer world, I really turn my direction back inside. Again, you know, if you notice what I keep talking about, it's turning your direction away from what's happening in the outer world and go inside yourself. And I go inside myself and see myself as a divine being of light, that, yes, there are things on the physical form that don't look like they're working to me. And if you take away the body and you take away the mind, we're all spiritual light. And so I could go inside myself and perceive myself as a spiritual being. And I can also perceive the people who are bothering me or disturbing me as spiritual beings too. And by bringing through that light, that actually can transform my perception. And my perception creates my reality. And as I start to shift my perception, the outside world changes at the same time. That too esoteric out there?
Well, you know what it is? It's kind of like when the ego takes over and you're thinking and you're thinking and you're thinking and you can't stop thinking, how do you shut the voices off in your head? And I'm not saying that that is necessarily the way it should be phrased, because that sounds like you're insane. But when people are thinking about their lives and what's right and what's wrong, and they wake up and they can't get back to sleep, and they sort of analyze and overthink, for lack of a better word, how do they shut the overthinking off? I mean, if your mind just will not stop racing, what do you do?
Well, I'll tell you what I've been doing, and I started teaching this, and it might not work for everybody. It doesn't work for all my students, but it might stimulate some ideas for people. I actually imagine myself taking a paintbrush with white paint and painting over the scene of everything my mind is overanalyzing.
Well, that's
so that
good.
I have a blank slate. And then I replace that with some positive thought of where I want to go. And then the thought comes up again, well, it's never worked, it's never going to work. I get out my white paintbrush and I paint that over again. And I keep doing that. And I've actually found that it puts me to sleep.
That's interesting. Yeah. But I mean, what I think what you're doing is you're swapping the churn with something else. I know when I was younger, and I probably still do this, I used to go to the mirror and just smile at myself. If I was upset about something, I would sort of try to make myself laugh. I'd make a face in the mirror and sort of laugh at myself to sort of just get myself into sort of like, you know, this is this trick I learned when I was training my dog, which didn't work for the dog, but did work for me, which was you get a soda can. And you put a few coins in it, and every time the dog like starts chewing on your shoe or whatever, you shake the can, and the dog's attention would be taken away for a second, and they would because you broke their train of thought, they stopped chewing the shoe. So every time that they went to chew the shoe, you'd ring the, shake the can. So it didn't work for my dog, as I said, but it did work for me. I have a lot of shoes that have a lot of holes in them. But it worked for me because I use that analogy of shaking the can. So if I am in a mood that is negative or I'm down or I'm consumed with something, I try to shake the can. And that's what I refer to it as, to sort of clear the air right. and get myself back on track.
Right.
And it does work. I mean, it's one of those things.
Yeah. And I think that's where community can come in, too, where, you know, what I do with friends and loved ones is we've kind of made this into a joke where, you know, people start, one of us will start complaining about something and everybody will say, replace that thought with something else. And it's where sometimes the power of community can come in to support us in break that train of thought, replace it with something else. And it's a discipline. I'm definitely not saying it's easy. I've been working.
No, it is. It's very difficult.
But,
yeah.
but if we can't do that as a society, as a global community, again, whatever we're thinking about is what we're going to see in the physical world. Teachers have been trying to teach that for thousands of years. Again, it's impossible to think one thing and produce another. So I think with looking at where the world is right now, hopefully that stimulates all of us to, well, let me give it a try. You know, it's
yeah.
worth our life.
I mean, it is worth, yeah, it is worth a try. I certainly think that that's true. And I think mm-hmm. people who find themselves saying, oh, I've met into many people who say, I can't meditate. I just can't sit still long enough. And it is a difficult thing, but I think what you do is you try to take it in small steps. You don't sit down for, say, I'm meditating for an hour or I'm
right.
going to – you start out for 3 or 4 minutes. And if you get through the 3 or 4 minutes without thinking of anything, or even if you just sit there for 3 or 4 minutes, you have made an impact in some capacity.
Yeah.
We're talking today with Sandra Ingerman, and we're talking about how to thrive in changing times. And it's an interesting topic because it is about – survival and how to get through these difficult times. And it's sort of it's a book that runs in tandem with her other book, How to Heal Toxic Thoughts. And we're talking about them. We're sort of overlapping topics here, which is fine because they all point to the same thing. And her website is www.sandraingerman.com, and her books are available on Amazon as well as other places. And they are simple steps to help us change our thought patterns and get us out of the negativity. Because the underlying theory here is that if we're all in this churn and we're all thinking these negative thoughts, we are actually creating and exacerbating the situation we're trying to solve because of the mushroom effect of all of this collective energy and thought. So if all this collective energy and thought were to be boiled down and reduced into happier thoughts or different thoughts, then the outcome would be happier and different. So it's important that we work towards that. You know, the idea of, there's a very famous phrase called analysis is paralysis that I'm sure you've heard. And I think that many people are really victims of that.
Right.
And that's probably part of the problem.
Right. Yeah. And it is stopping ourselves and going, you know, because I think that the analysis is a form of sabotaging ourselves from using our creative power to create something different. That analysis takes us back into, well, it didn't work and it's never going to work.
Right. Yes, yeah, it's sort of going backwards. It is.
It's going backwards because we keep looking at what didn't work. And so it's really stopping and saying, it didn't work. You're right, mind. It didn't work. And so now,
moving on from there is the thing.
What do we want to do to create something different?
Yeah. I had a guest on once who were talking about the concept of time. And I think this really sort of dovetails in with what you're saying, because his concept was that the second that just passed contains all of history in it. Mm-hmm. If you think of it in terms of a continuum of time being continuum. So whatever just passed, the last second that just passed a second ago, contains everything. It contains all of history that led us up to that point. But the second to come, which is yet to happen, we do have free will and control over that second that is yet to come. So if we turn that second that is yet to happen into a positive step in the right direction, we really have taken the marriage of your concept and this concept of time and put them into a very positive space, because we do can say, rather than going backwards through analysis, we move forward.
That's beautiful. No, you said that very well, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's an interesting concept. You know, time really is what we're talking about, because we can't go back.
Right.
We can't go back. It's really a waste of time, literally.
Right.
But yet we want to, because there's something familiar about it, I guess, and there's some comfort in that in some way, I guess.
Yeah, when, you know, I teach my practitioners who work with shamanic healing that clients really don't know how to create a positive present for and future for themselves, so that after you heal them from a trauma, you first have to teach them how to create something different. Because how we're actually trained in this society, it's on an unconscious level, we don't do this consciously, is you get through one trauma and you recreate another trauma in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're taught how to do. So it's learning a new way of being in the world, that not to recreate the past that didn't work for you, but what would you like to create right now? And what's a very simple step? What's the next step to get there? Because I think that what happens is people get paralyzed first in not even knowing what would bring them happiness and joy and meaning back in life. And then they come up with goals that are too overwhelming, so that we have to come up with a step-by-step plan of what's something I can do tomorrow that brings more joy and meaning into my life again and brings harmony back to myself and the planet.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point, a very important point for people to understand, because I think if you look at this as a task, it is almost insurmountable, or it can be insurmountable, and therefore people get discouraged very quickly. But, you know, it's great progress that can be made in these sort of these baby steps. And I have been through great trauma in my life, and I used every form of therapy you can possibly imagine. And I have to say that it worked for me. And I know that at the time that I was in the midst of this tragedy and drama that I had to face, it didn't seem as if there was a way out. But I do know that through hard work, perseverance, patience, which I don't have any of, it did work. And I can speak from an advocate because of having walked in those shoes. And I just know that it does work.
Right.
And so there's something to be said for that. If you can speak to somebody who has been in that situation, it's kind of like, you know, an addiction of sort. You know, drama is an addiction of sort. You know, people often create drama in their lives when it's not there, because it's like a fix.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we have to actually replace drama, depression, all these things actually become habitual behavior, and so you have to learn simple things that can replace that kind of
right.
behavior.
Right, yeah. That's when you need to shake that can, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Rethinking those, and I think the reason that we go back to them is because they are familiar. You know, I think people are much more are happier in familiar discontent than they are with unfamiliar change.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People would rather stay with the known, even if it doesn't work. Oftentimes,
right.
They would rather stay with the known because it is known.
It's predictable. Yeah,
right.
It's predictable. We've had a great discussion. My guest today has been Sandra Ingerman. We've been talking about how to thrive in changing times. From an astrological standpoint, those of you who tune into this show on astrology, we'll be back to astrology next week. Don't you worry. But astrology ties into this, because this summer we're coming up into a very important time where the Earth is really going to be faced with a significant, what's called the Grand Cardinal Cross, which is an alignment of planets at all the four corners of the cross, which is a significant time of new beginnings. And so what I'm saying, and the reason I get wonderful people on like Sandra, is to try to help people think in terms of how we make this change happen, because it's going to happen. And if we are positive in our approach to that happening, then we have some control over it, and we can shift it if we have that collective mentality. Sandra's website is www.sandraingerman.com. We've been talking about how to thrive in changing times. And I think that in closing, Sandra, this book would work regardless of the time that you picked it up, whether it was a swirl of events or just a day-to-day living. Mm-hmm. We need to understand how to change and how to deal with change because it's inevitable. It's always going to be there.
Yes, and to remember that the spiritual work that we do does make a difference.
It does, and it may not seem it at the time, but it does work, and that the positive energy and the positive thoughts that we put out there do work. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and the last couple weeks ago when you were on as well. It's been great to talk with you. I think your message is wonderful. I encourage people to pick up these books and learn these simple steps because they will help make the world better. So I appreciate you very much coming on, Sandra.
Thank you so much, Chris, and thanks for all you're doing.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. It's a labor of love for both of us, I think. So we just keep on plugging away at it.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your time, and we'll be back next week. Thanks, guys, so much for listening, and thank you, Sandra, very much. Take care.
You've been listening to Turning of the Wheel with your host, Chris Fleischer. To schedule a reading with me or to order artwork, you may visit my website at www.chrisfleischer.com. That's www.chrisfleischer.com. Or email me, and you can call me at 978-264-0668. Thank you. And as always, be open to possibilities.